am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Once again, I'm joined by Mike McArdle. His latest book is a marvelous collection, Unlikely Love Stories. It's his eighth book. And not only have these books been heartwarming collections of his writing, essays on the people he encounters on life, we meet and re-meet some of those interesting people he encounters in his travels as a reporter for Global BC. His pieces usually appear at the end of the news hour, and they're wonderful. Everyone knows Mike, they're familiar with his speaking style, and they know what to expect and are often delighted and surprised by what he encounters, discovers, or highlights. He's a real treasure. We'll talk about this latest collection and check in now with Mike. He's always a welcome visitor to this program. One should also note that his previous seven books have raised over $80,000 for Variety, the children's charity. This book is no different. Its partial proceeds will be donated to Variety. The book is published by Harbor. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Mike McArdle. Mr. McArdle, good morning.
Hello. Thank you. Not Mr., please.
It's nice to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you.
Yeah.
So you say nice things.
they're all true. The gift of this book and is that it's quite engrossing.
Thank you.
When you read the book, you know, you read it, you probably want to read one or two things, but you end up reading more. You want to read as much as you can. But if we've read your previous books, this book is also great because we get to learn and meet again some of the characters.
Some of the people,
yeah. Like the last book was dedicated to Judy, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so
that's probably the best dedication I've ever written.
Indeed.
It still breaks my heart when I think of, and makes me feel good.
Yeah.
When I think how that book came about.
Yeah, and so you met her finally, right?
Oh, yeah. Last year at a book signing, and it was so funny. Like I wrote in the book, there's people waiting to get, and they tell me their name, and I smile, and I say hello, you know, and we chat a little bit, and this woman says her name is Judy, and I thank her, smiles and smiles, and I write this, who's the book for? And she says, for her, and I wrote, Dear Judy, and I got about the J down before I said, Michael, you idiot, this is Judy.
Yeah.
The one who the book was dedicated to, the one who is fighting cancer. So I look up, and she's not still smiling, but now she's crying. And so we hug each other, and I tell the people in the line who she is, and they all clap and applaud her, wow, what a neat moment in my life.
Yeah, and so this
book, and she's fine.
Oh, that's
great.
She's
absolutely fine. She's written to me a couple of times on the email, and she's doing great.
That's terrific to hear, yeah. So, but this book is dedicated to, I guess it's dedicated to me if I wanted to write my name.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can choose the person, and why not have it individually dedicated, because it's from you and all the people listening to this and other people with them that I get the stories from. So
yeah.
I owe it all to you.
Now, I was in Costco the other day and I saw your book there.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed it was covered in plastic.
Idiots.
Yeah.
One word, two syllables.
Yeah.
No, it's three. Idiots. I have no... Costco wanted that? Yes. Okay, I can say that even though they're selling lots and lots and lots of books. But what the heck do they want it covered for?
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing inside. There's no $20 bills. There's no pictures. No pop-ups or anything like that. And I was signing books in Costco recently, and they have some poor guy there trying to rip the plastic off each book because you can't sign a book that's wrapped in plastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And but by the way, the other one that we meet again in the book is Harold. How's Harold doing?
Harold died.
Oh, really?
About 3 weeks ago. We had coffee, as we did for 5 years, a little more than that, every Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning, we had it in North Vancouver in a different place, a privately run place, not Tim Hortons this time. And he had eggs and gave me his toast because he said it was too much, and had coffee, and then he walked outside with his walker, but I mean, he's still walking outside.
Yeah.
Got into his little Honda Civic, which was filled with magazines and newspapers, because he's reading everything all the time. At breakfast, we were talking about the origins of the universe yet again, and he went off to a store to do his shopping and to get his exercise, and that night he died quite peacefully. Wow.
How old was he?
94.
Really? Yeah.
Coming up to, well, actually, coming up, his birthday. His birthday is the end of August. The end of December.
Yeah.
Maybe 95. Just about 95.
And so in the book, you talk about meeting him, as you said, on every Tuesday with Don. Don was, what, in his 80s?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was a baby. Well, yeah. No, I was a baby.
You were, yeah. Well, and you hung out with these guys.
Uh-huh.
And what did you learn about life?
Everything.
Really?
Totally everything. I learned that the most basic thing of all I have learned from everyone is there are people who seem happy and discontent. That's a trait word. Who seem happy, who you like to be with, who are doing things. And it doesn't matter what they're doing. Walking around the block, they could be doing. And they're always up. Always. You know people like that.
Mm-hmm.
They are. They're not Pollyanna, but they're just okay. And then there are other people that are always down, just miserable. You know, if they see things badly, people are always doing stuff to them. They have a lot of pains. They're kind of sick occasionally, and they're down. What I learned is, basically, you can pick the kind of life you want, regardless of whether you have any money, have a job, have problems. You can still decide, okay, I'm not going to let this get me down. I'm going to just get through it, and your life is better. And if you decide that life is miserable, well, then it will be miserable. That's what I've learned from them.
Yeah, there's a lot of hope in life, right?
Yeah, totally. And you can pick it. You can choose it. I've seen it with people in wheelchairs. There's some of them in this book, you know, blind. Bernie Smith, the cop who I wrote about last time in the last book, a whole chapter, and this time just mentioned, he also died a week or two ago. But, I mean, blind, totally blind, and whistling and happy and joking. All right, he doesn't make others feel bad about his blindness. Sure, he wished he could see. But as soon as you see him, he says, I've seen you before somewhere, and you know he can't see you at all. But he smiles and he hits you on the back or the shoulder or the head, wherever his hand lands. And you feel good being with him. Well, God, you know, what better thing could he give to the world and his neighbors and his friends and his family than to make you feel good, even though he is blind?
Yeah. In all of your work in writing these books on television, showing us these stories, showing us these people about, you know, these hopeful people, the good in life. Did you have any explanation as to why bad things happen, though?
Yes. I feel like everybody on the planet feels about the shooting in Connecticut.
Right.
I mean, sick, literally sick, sick inside me. You do, too. Everybody does. Why do bad things happen? Because that's creation. That's the earth. I mean, it starts out of, you know, there are storms. There are ice storms. There are droughts. Why do they happen? Way past me. They do happen. They've happened ever, you know, they've been recorded in the, I went to the King Tut thing.
Oh, in Seattle?
In Seattle, yeah. I also went to it 35 years ago while it was in Vancouver, but I forgot about it then.
Yeah.
No, well, it was in Seattle then.
Yeah.
But, I'm looking at pieces of rock carved into pharaohs and stuff like that. That's 4,000, over 4,000 years old. That piece of rock right in front of me, that's 4,000 years old. That's amazing. But then I learn a little of the history then, and you got completely one army slewing another army, or some pharaoh taking over and having 10,000 or 100,000 slaves that he, you know, bad things happen. They've always happened. And yet things happen. They always happen. Everything dies. Some die way too soon. But you know, you put a here. Why do bad things happen? Okay, I find stories just by going out and looking for actively looking for somebody doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this woman, 3 or 4 months ago, I guess, whenever bulb planting season was, and. She's on her on her knees with a little padding, and she's digging with a trowel and putting bulbs into the front of her garden. So I say, hello, you know, hello, that's where it all starts. And what you doing? Well, obviously, you know, she's planting bulbs, and I say, that's very nice. You plant a lot of bulbs just to get a conversation going. And she says, yeah, but these will be my last ones. I said, why? She says, well, she had terminal cancer. I don't know what kind.
Yeah.
But she said she didn't think she would live till Christmas, or not much after that. And so, you know, my heart is breaking, and she's just telling me this matter-of-factly. And I said, well, why are you planting the bulbs? You know, I'm thinking you're not going to see them. And she says, so my neighbors will have something pretty to look at in the spring.
Hmm.
Oh, God. You know, that's not been on television. I can't do that because that happened on a weekend when I wasn't working. Bad thing, she got cancer. Not terribly old, probably her 50s maybe. Good thing is she's doing something good for others, even though she's not going to be around. Why do bad things happen?
Yeah.
Why do good things happen?
Yeah, and then that's the theme of the book, that there's love stories, and they're all in different forms. You can find love everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're talking on a Monday morning. It's 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Are you working today, by the way?
Yep.
Yeah. And so do you know now yet what tonight will what
oh,
be?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's a big surprise, but all of life is. About 5 minutes after I say goodbye to you, then I'll be calling and asking for a camera person to work with, because every day for 36 years I have begged in the morning, like everybody else, can I have somebody to work with?
Yeah.
And they look at the priority list and they say, well, yes, soon.
Right.
As soon as the other stuff gets done. And then I'll meet somebody, I have no idea who, and we will start driving around literally in circles, sometimes in circles around a block, sometimes, which way are we going? And I hold my hands up and I point in opposite directions. I don't care.
Yeah.
Go wherever wherever you want to, wherever you feel like it, especially go, and let's go get some coffee right now. And we do the same thing as looking for the lady with the flower bulbs, and look for somebody doing anything, basically anything other than jogging with headphones on. In fact, I've talked to a few of those people, and they become funny stories, but
yeah.
I think half the world jogs with headphones on and hides from the outside world.
Yeah.
But anyhow, and then, say hello, and say, go on talking, what you doing? And if I can find something neat about whatever they tell me, well, and if they don't mind their picture getting taken, well, that becomes tonight's story. And if they, if I can't find it, I always blame myself, because
yeah.
I know there's something there, but I can't get it out. So I swallow and move on to the next person.
A couple pieces in the book deal with alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
and you profile people who have overcome the struggle, or not even overcome it, but who are dealing with it.
Yep.
And you give it such humanity.
Well, it's the biggest problem, man. I mean, my father was a fall down, violent drunk. When he would come home, this was after this war, which he would brag in the bar about how many people he had killed. Well, he didn't kill anybody because he was on a occupation force. But come home and start banging. My mother would close the bedroom door, and she would push a dresser in front of it, and we would sit on the floor leaning against the dresser while he banged on the door, and she would say, "Don't worry, he'll fall asleep soon." And he did. And then one morning she woke me up, and we tiptoed out of that apartment, and I didn't see him again for 12 or 15 years.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, that's my personal, that kind of story is repeated zillions of times around the world. But alcohol is still, and I love wine, but alcohol is still the major destructive drug in the world, if you overdo it. I mean, regularly, you know, crack and heroin kill you a lot quicker, yeah. but it's illegal, and so you have to kill somebody to get it, or somebody kills you, and it's a lot. The other drugs are really violent drugs, but alcohol is the world's biggest destructive drug, and it's also a wonderful thing if you have just one or two glasses of wine.
Yeah, and so we meet some people who are overcoming it and who have done well. But someone like Constance Barnes, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know her well, but when she was in her drunken phase, everybody knew of her because there was her face in a newspaper while she was arrested for drunk driving or being in an accident, whatever it was. Then I met her a while later, and she was just beaming, just glowing like somebody when they fall in love, they glow. When somebody gets control of a bad thing in their life, they also glow. And she was glowing, and still is. I've seen her a bunch of times since then, and still has the glow.
Yeah. These books have done so well, and they've even done well across the country. Why do you think these books have struck a chord with readers?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I can't answer that. People tell me they like them, and I'm thrilled. But I have no idea what I'm doing. And I mean that in the humblest way. There's I see life that way. I see it, you know, you talked to me about the Riley thing where a kid,
right.
this autistic kid who really had no clue of what he, of life, was talking to me like Buddha or Jesus or Muhammad or anybody about whatever you believe you can do. When I started thinking about that, just sort of believing, even though I said I'm pretending to myself, I'm just gonna say I believe it. I don't really believe it, but it became a habit, and I started that with the stories for television, and that was, well, the second time I wrote about it was 5 years later. That was 1,000 consecutive working days of saying I'll find a story today, and no misses.
Yeah.
I mean, 1,000 consecutive days. Wow, and it's gone on for 3 years since then, the same thing. And same thing with my health. I said, I'll just be healthy. Okay, so I get a cold. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And I say, but I'm not going to be sick. And by the second cup of coffee, I'm fine. And I just forget about it. It's in the story of the old horse. You forget about yourself, you know, because I have... hay fever and allergies to horses, because I was never around horses. And so I go do a story on this old horse. That's a beautiful story. In short, for anybody listening who hasn't read it, this police horse had been a good police horse for a bunch of years and then got old, and they gave him to a therapeutic riding academy where he took care of kids, made kids feel better for 10 years or something like that, and then just collapsed. Well, the police took him back and let him retire in the police barns. He just walked around doing whatever he wanted, and they gave him warm water and softened food, and he just lived wonderfully. And the other horses, you know, when this horse walked by, the other horses would get up and watch him. Hmm. It was like they knew he was special. Well, I finished this whole story and realized I hadn't sneezed once. My eyes didn't get red and puffy from an allergy, because I wasn't thinking about myself at all. I was just thinking about the horse.
Yeah.
And you can do the same thing with life.
Yeah.
You forget yourself and believe things will be okay, and it gives you a fighting chance.
Yeah, it's a great philosophy. Christmas is next week.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got big plans?
I'm going to Montreal to see my grandchildren.
Ah. Yeah.
They will be warm and the weather will be cold.
Well, continued good luck with this book. It's always nice to talk to you, and happy Christmas and all good wishes for the new year, Mike.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you and to everyone.
The book is called Unlikely Love Stories. It's from Harbor Publishing. It's author Mike McArdle on the line from North Vancouver. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.